make you afraid of death. They hold death up there against you and say, this is what would happen to you. J. Edgar Hoover said it himself. He said, we want to convince every black young revolutionary that if you become a revolutionary, you'll be a dead revolutionary. So the whole thing was to terrorize your community. But what we want to do is we hold up the concept of martyrdom. We raise up these African martyrs. Bobby Hutton is a martyr. Malcolm X was a martyr. Patrice Lumumba, martyr. All of them martyrs in the struggle for our liberation. And they are not to us evidence of why we should be afraid to fight against imperialism. They are evidence of us of how terrible U.S. imperialism is, number one, and then further evidence that black people will continue to struggle until we know freedom. All power to the people. Black power to the African community. Uhuru.
Africa Live.
Africa Live here on thewhoradio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and we've got a great show lined up for you today. We'll be, first of all, recognizing today as the birth of Robert Mangaliso Sobukwe, an incredible leader in the African Revolution, particularly based in occupied Azania, what is still known today by the colonial name South Africa. We'll also be commemorating Fred Hampton, leader of the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party, who was assassinated 41 years ago on yesterday. So we'll be looking at his legacy as well, and we'll also be interviewing Diop Olugbala, who, like Fred Hampton, is today a leader in a young leader in resistance struggle, you know, struggle for self-determination for African people. So, you know, stick with us. We got a great show coming up today. And before we get into all of that, I'm going to play a little music for you. This is Roberta Flack with Compared to What?
I said I love the lie. Possession is the motivation, hanging up the whole damn nation. Looks like we always end up in a rut, trying to make it real. But compared to what? Slaughterhouse. Killing hard.
And welcome back to Africa Live here on thehooradio.com. I'm your host, Yabinga Zimbabwe. And today on Africa Live, one of the things that we want to do is to talk about Fred Hampton. Yesterday marked the 41st anniversary of the assassination of Fred Hampton and Mark Clark. And today we dedicate this program to Fred Hampton, who was an incredible African leader. For those who aren't familiar with him, Fred Hampton was the deputy chairman of the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party. He was 21 years old when the U.S. government gunned him down as he lay asleep in his bed in Chicago. Now, Fred Hampton was a natural organizer. He was charismatic. He had a intensity, you know, to him. You know, he was a real. If you've heard any of the speeches that he's that he made, you know, you'd see he was a real intense kind of brother who you could easily see, you know, his real dedication to African people. You may hear the name Rainbow Coalition and you think of Jesse Jackson, but it was actually Fred Hampton who created the first Rainbow Coalition as a Black Panther organizer in Chicago, when he organized a coalition between gangs there in Chicago, saying, look, you know, if we keep fighting each other, what's going to happen is we're going to stay poor while the system continues to get rich at our expense. And so what he did is he began to organize the different gangs there in Chicago and brought them together, called it a Rainbow Coalition, you know, and created a coalition, a truce between them all. And, of course, then after the FBI and Chicago police killed Fred, Jesse Jackson took the Rainbow Coalition thing for his own thing. But Fred Hampton was a great organizer, and some of the most significant work that Fred Hampton led up was the programs that the Panthers were carrying out in the African community throughout Illinois. Under his leadership, the Black Panther Party held a people's clinic that served the black community there in Chicago. He did a free breakfast for school children program. They did other programs that dealt with monitoring the police, watching police as they attacked the African community, and doing political education among the masses of African people. And now, the thing is, while Fred was leading this incredible work in Chicago, and it was incredible work. I mean, the African community there in Chicago was greatly impacted by this stuff, and he became known as this incredible brother, incredible leader. And while Fred Hampton was engaged in this work in Chicago, the FBI was engaged in a serious kind of counterinsurgency campaign against the Black Power movement. The Panthers specifically had been declared by J. Edgar Hoover in 1968 as the greatest threat to the internal security of the United States. And so the U.S. government, through its FBI and other police agencies, was coming down hard on the Black Power movement and the Panthers. Leaders were being imprisoned and assassinated all over the country. Huey Newton was in prison. Johnny Huggins and Bunchy Carter were both assassinated in California. Our chairman, Chairman Amalia Shetela, was in prison. He was then named Joe Waller, but he was in prison. And various members of the Black Power movement, you know, and organizations in the Black Power movement were under serious assault all across the U.S. One of the things that was happening under this COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence program of the FBI, which targeted the Black Power movement, targeted Black Power leaders, as they called them, Black Messiahs, you know, who could possibly lead our people in struggle for our freedom. Part of this program was sending agent provocateurs into Black Power organizations to create turmoil inside the organizations. And what they would do, they do things like get people to engage in illegal activity, you know, or even engage in discussions, you know, that would give an excuse for police to lock up or murderers. You know, they would do things like put jackets on people. And when we say put jackets on people, we're talking about the agents, the FBI agents, would be pointing out other people inside the organizations and saying, well, this person is a snitch, or this person is an informant working for the FBI, you know. So they do that type of thing to create, you know, create animosity inside the organization. They'd be creating beefs inside organizations. It was a serious kind of tactic that had a real impact on the Black Panther Party, on other organizations inside the Black Power movement as well. And by the time we get to 1969, the Black Panther Party had been seriously impacted by these FBI tactics. Fred Hampton was one of the remaining leaders who had, you know, real potential to lead the Panthers forward. And so they targeted Fred. They used a Negro agent provocateur named William O'Neill, who they had infiltrate the Panther Party. And he became director of security for the Chicago chapter of the Black Panther Party. Now, the thing is, positions in security is one of the areas that agents, you know, agents like to get into, because it gives them certain kind of access and allows them to even break down the security of the organization. And William O'Neill, this FBI agent provocateur, was himself Fred Hampton's bodyguard. And this is something that we saw as a recurring thing. Like Malcolm X's head of security, Gene Roberts, was an agent, you know, was an undercover agent. And in this particular instance, William O'Neill, the FBI agent, provided the FBI with a layout of the apartment that Fred Hampton was sleeping in. He drug Fred Hampton's Kool-Aid so that when the police came in to kill him, he couldn't defend himself. He was incapable of defending himself because he was drugged up. And so what they did on December 4th, 1969, was they busted into that apartment at 4 o'clock in the morning and shot the place up. They pumped around 99 bullets into that apartment that night. That's what's estimated. They pumped about 99 bullets into that apartment that night, or that morning, because it was 4 o'clock in the morning. And they murdered Mark Clark, who was leader of the Peoria, Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party. They murdered Mark Clark. They seriously injured Verlina Brewer, Ronald Satchel, Blair Anderson, and Brenda Harris, who were all also in the apartment when the state attacked there. And as Fred Hampton lay helpless, drugged, on a bed beside a Cool and Jerry, who was then known as Deborah Johnson, who was 9 months pregnant with his son, police pumped bullets into his bed. In fact, they pumped so many bullets into his bed that the bed itself was bouncing. And so what they did was they, after that, they dragged her out. Then they dragged him out. And at that point, Fred Hampton wasn't dead. In fact, one of the other Panthers who was there said he heard them say, one cop was saying, "That's Fred Hampton." And another one asked, "Is he dead? Bring him out." And the other cop said, "He's barely alive. He'll make it." Then they heard two shots. And apparently the cops had fired two bullets point blank into Fred Hampton's head. And then one of the cops said, "He's good and dead now." So, like I said, they shot up to 99 bullets into that apartment that night. And they killed Fred Hampton. They killed Mark Clark. And they seriously wounded other folks who were in that apartment that night. Now, Fred's assassination effectively broke the back of the Black Panther Party. Like I said, they had imprisoned other leaders. They had assassinated other leaders. This was, by this point in 1969, Fred Hampton's murder was kind of like the last straw that really broke the back of the Black Panther Party. And, you know, the way they did this, the way they killed Fred, was in a way to make an example of him. And to tell African people, you know, like, this is what happens to you when you resist. This is what happens to you when you try to organize for freedom. When you try to get, when you try to struggle for a better life for yourself. This is what happens, you know. So this was terrorism, you know, not in the sense of how it gets defined today, because like Chairman Amalia Sotelo says, the way they talk about terrorism today, they define it as anything that scares white people. But based on its actual definition, terrorism is a tactic that's used to scare a people into conceding, to scare people out of fighting. And that's what this was. That's what the way they murdered Fred Hampton, the way they killed Malcolm X, and the way they killed so many other of our leaders, Martin Luther King, even, you know, they killed them in this extremely violent way as a form of terrorism to scare African people out of struggle, you know. And of course, following that, we see also the continuation of counterinsurgency tactics that included flooding the African community with drugs and raising up neocolonialism, a sector of Africans inside the African community who were allowed to be administrators for this system, allowed to be mayors and police chiefs and hold these positions to participate in the oppression of African people. We saw following, you know, this military defeat of the Black Power movement that happened in the 1960s, the continuation of counterinsurgency and these other forms. But we want to raise up Fred Hampton on today. Dedicate today's program to Fred Hampton, to this incredible African leader, this incredible example to African people everywhere. You know, Fred was young cat. You know, Fred was barely grown, you know, when he began leading struggle. You know, I think he should serve as an example to every African person, especially young Africans. You know, in dedicating this program to Fred Hampton, we're raising Fred up, but we also say, you know, the best way to raise up Fred Hampton, to celebrate Fred Hampton and who he was, is to be Fred Hampton. And what that means is really engaging in struggle today, because we still ain't free. The struggle that Fred Hampton died in the process of making is a struggle that we are still engaged in today. And if we do not carry out that struggle, if we do not continue to make that struggle and take it to its completion, then it's a disrespect to Fred Hampton, to Huey Newton, to so many others, Ella Baker, and so many others who have had dedicated their lives to this struggle for our people. So we raise up Fred, we salute Fred, and we call on everybody who's listening to be Fred Hampton, be incredible leaders that our people require today to take our struggle to completion. With that, we're going to go to a break, and I want to play for you a song that was sent to us by a brother out of England called A.N.D., and this song is called Any Means. So check this out. It's a pretty nice joint. Any Means by A.N.D.
After the defeat of the Black Revolution of the 60s, the U.S. government flooded the African community with deadly drugs, chemical warfare against African people, in an attempt to make sure the movement would never rise up again. Heroin was brought into the African communities from Southeast Asia by the U.S. government as it was waging war against the people of Vietnam in the late 60s. The drugs are a way of destabilizing and criminalizing the African community. During the 70s and 80s, as the U.S. was attacking the people of Central and South America, African communities were saturated with cocaine, especially a deadly derivative called crack.
No compromise and no surrender. Ain't no pretender. This ain't no fake team. No EastEnders. Cause my hands cross, I'm next. Hidden agenda. Cause every 4 years it says process occurs. When you lose that little bit more control over your whole lives. Being controlled by them old guys. Telling a whole heap of hard truths. While you're jamming in your yard by the straight suits. Becoming dependent on it again. Stuck in a loop. I mean, system. Taking everything from what you see. Have you ever heard of Grimmjow? Look it up. And check the wording, and that means they be stupid. I wake up, reverse the things that are black, but with no lies. 50-55 with the same year that the first boy arrived on a boat called Jesus. Can you believe this? Listening and leaving
freedom ain't gonna cost. So we regulate it, freedom ain't gonna cost. So we regulate it, freedom ain't gonna cost. So we regulate it, lead by example and demonstrate. Freedom ain't gonna cost. So we regulate it, freedom ain't gonna cost. So we regulate it, freedom ain't gonna cost. So we regulate it, lead by example and demonstrate.
A present situation, there's fresh reality. This ain't no optical illusion, this is reality. Slums of fatality. Upon my conscience, anything that the system won't allow. So I gotta disavow anyone that tries to lead me astray. Show them some wisdom and then they try to lead them astray. Once I speech, you couple heads and start to feel the same way. A perception of reality, color the field in. 64 years of black history lost. It's only recording from 1619. I try to show with the hunch, but it was just chastening and dodge the question completely. But then I knew certain heads were sneaky. I found myself watching even harder. Discreetly, knowledge is the key to freedom. Believe me, no truth saying nowadays, I don't know it ain't easy.
Freedom ain't gonna cost, so we regulate it. Freedom ain't gonna cost, so we regulate it. Freedom ain't gonna cost, so we regulate it. Lead by example and demonstrate. Freedom ain't gonna cost, so we regulate it. Freedom ain't gonna cost, so we regulate it. Freedom ain't gonna cost, so we regulate it. Lead by example and demonstrate.
The most potent weapon. The hands of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed. That's why they like to keep you out of the loop. All confused and depressed. Find comfort, 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 comfort. Forget that, get out of your mind right now. Cause that ain't gonna leave you nowhere but a debt. Or even worse, put in check.
freedom ain't gonna cost.
So we regulate it, freedom ain't gonna cost.
So we regulate it,
lead by example and demonstrate it.
Freedom ain't gonna cost.
So we regulate it,
freedom ain't gonna cost.
So we regulate it,
freedom ain't gonna cost.
So we regulate it,
lead by example and demonstrate it.
We feel the same. Whoa, that was A&D with Any Means, brother out of England. Nice track. I like that. So what we're going to do now, first of all, you're listening to Africa Live here on thehooradio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe. And what we're going to do now, just in continuing with this dedication to Fred Hampton, is play a speech made by Fred Hampton. This was after the death of Ho Chi Minh, and also the death of a brother there in Chicago who was killed by police there. So we're going to play this speech from Fred Hampton.
We feel the same way Larry Robinson felt when Larry Robinson said, "I don't care what anybody says, be it my mother, my father, my family, be it the pigs, be it other members of the Black Panther Party. I feel like hungry children should be fed, not because they have money, but for the simple reason that they're hungry." That's why Larry Robinson said. We got a thing, the Black Panther Party, that we talk about being so revolutionary, proletarian, intoxicated, that we cannot be astronomically intimidated. The way that you get so revolutionary, proletarian, intoxicated, the way that you get high off the people, is because many people in the Black Panther Party have found a certain potion that our Minister of Health mixed up. Our Minister of Health is Dr. Fieldswood, if y'all don't know it. Ron Satcham. I know y'all heard about the People's Health Clinic is going to be opened up the 28th of this month, and that People's Health Clinic is opened up because of Dr. Fieldswood. That's right. We went into the community and told the community, what do you think about all the diseases that's running rapid in the community? All the early child deaths is running rapid in the oppressed community. What do you think about the high bills? What do you think about doctors? You think about public wealth instead of public health. And you know what the people told us? They said, don't send us no doctors. Sending us up with all of those damn pills. And we will never, ever, ever cure the people's ills. Send us little Ron Satcham. Send us Dr. Fieldswood from the Black Panther Party. That's what we send them. We send them Dr. Fieldswood the 28th of this month. Dr. Fieldswood is going to show you where it's at. Open up that People's Health Clinic. We're not going to be charging nobody. People ain't got to fill out no questionnaires and prove who they are and prove that they're poor. We're not going to go to their house and tell them you got to show us so many rats before you get the treatment. It's not going to be anything like that. We're going to set up a situation that people will be cured because they're sick. Simple as that. A lot of you people are going to have to make a commitment. And it's not a hard commitment to make, is it? It's either every day in Ho Chi Minh. It's either Lyndon Baines Johnson or Mao Zedong. That's not no hard commitment to make, is it? It's either Richard Nixon or Fidel Castro. And right in the city of Chicago, it's either Bobby Rush, Minister of Defense for the Black Panther Party, or Jesse L. Jackson of Operation Breadbasket. Dead because he was fighting the people. Everybody know that. He was tired of fighting the people. Larry Robinson is dead because he was a fighter for peace. They'll tell you that these brothers here were war monsters. They have the trick of making themselves look like the angel and making you look like the devil, which is only the fact that they make the devil look like an angel and make the angel look like the devil. And I'm telling you that just as our motto says, we don't believe in war. We're against war. We understand that the only way to stop war is to engage in war. We don't dig a gun, but the way to get rid of a gun, make a man get rid of a gun, is for you yourself to pick up a gun. This is what Ho Chi Minh understood. This is what Larry Robinson understood. This is what Chairman Mao Zedong understands. This is what the Black Panther Party understands. This is what anybody that calls themselves a revolutionary or want to support the revolution, anybody understands what we're talking about. It's nothing hard to understand. Many of you people who get hung up and you are racking your brains about who to follow and who not to follow are nothing but a bunch of people that's bullshitting, because it's very clear who to follow. It's very clear who the enemy is attacking viciously, who the enemy is painting black, and it's very clear who the enemy is playing up and saying he's an all right guy. They will not wipe out the Black Panther Party, because thy chairman by the field says, as long as there's any black people, one black person in the world, there will be a Black Panther Party. Larry Robinson said, no longer can I allow the pigs to brutalize the people any longer. He felt the same way that Huey P. Newton felt. And he did the same thing that Huey P. Newton would do. And Larry Robinson said that I'm standing here on my constitutional rights. And the only thing that can move me will be death. And there's nothing wrong with death, because if I can't find anything worth dying for, then I'm not fit living. I'm ready to make a commitment now. I'm only 20 years old, but if I live to 80 and I never make a commitment, I'll be dead anyway. If I live till I'm 99, I know that I died at 20, because all those other years that I lived not knowing I made a commitment, it would be nothing but a ceasing of your breathing at 99. Larry said it would be nothing but an announcement of my death at an earlier date. I would have died when I was 20. I'm going to stand right here and not make a commitment right now, saying that I'm going to stay right down here and defend the people that belong to me, the people that have been oppressed by the pigs. And that's what Larry Robinson did. He was proletarian intoxicated. He couldn't be intimidated. Was no fear. Was no compromise. Malcolm said, was no love lost. He understood the enemy. He understood the language of the enemy. He communicated very well. Let's just start communicating. Let's say that Larry Robinson, Ho Chi Minh, might have died in the sense of nothing. They didn't really die, because the spirit still lives in the people. And that spirit that ain't left with the people, we're going to use that spirit to carry on the proletarian revolution. I know this. Larry Robinson died for the people.
Right on.
And that's a revolutionary death.
Right on.
Let's say a liberation prayer for Larry Robinson.
Right on.
We got him on our mind. A long time ago, we was talking about the mountaintop in the valley. Larry Robinson, in a sense, was on the mountaintop. In that Larry Robinson was going to college. Could have got him a job, went to school, got some good grades, came out with a shirt and suit and tie on and walked the streets and wouldn't know everybody. Nobody would have brought everybody. They would have told him, say, you're all right because you're not around 2350 West Madison. You're not selling town for paper. You're not feeding homeless children. You're not trying to cure the sick. But Larry Robinson chose, in other words, to say that I don't care what it might be up there. I know where the commitment is, and my whole life has been a life of commitment. I don't intend to compromise now. I don't care what it feels like up there, how nice it may be, how wonderful it may be, and how easy and luxurious life can be. I don't care if I don't have a dime. I know it's hard to be a socialist. I know it's damn impossible to be a communist in this society, but that's what I intend to be. I intend to live in a communal fashion. I intend to live like a communist and live with my comrades. I intend to die for the people. Revolutionary power to Ho Chi Minh, the revolutionary power to Larry Robinson, and all power to the people, because that's where it belongs, in the hands of the people.
Here's a story told to the children.
That was Fred Hampton speaking after the death of Larry Robinson, a member of the Black Panther Party, and after the death of Ho Chi Minh. We're going to play a song for you called This Is Real Hard. Just thinking about Fred Hampton, one of the things he did was he organized Africans and Africans who were in gangs and stuff, said, look, how about you get organized in the struggle for our freedom as opposed to fighting each other? And this is a song that deals with that kind of question. So this is real hard. This is actually myself and a brother named Tori.
Marquell McCullough, Catherine Johnson, Junior Manning, Devon Dawson, so many more have been taken from my. You say you hard, but when police come, you duck, duck, duck. Y'all duck and run for protection. But when there's beef up in the streets, y'all cats is ready to buck, buck, buck. But see, you buckling in the wrong direction. You say you hard, but when police come, you duck, duck, duck. Y'all duck and run for protection. But when there's beef up in the streets, y'all cats is ready to buck, buck, buck. But see, you buckling in the wrong direction. First verses for the one to be thugs, or the ones quick pretend to rise beef. slugs. They get powder and pills and crack up your knees and drugs. They hustle but don't even know they employees of the government. And ain't no retirement plan. See all y'all get, man, it's a lock sale or hot shells and Glocks held by cops. They don't live on your block, but they come with arms like this Afghanistan and Iraq. And why not? It's the same scene, same game, same teams. Here they call them the cops and there they call them Marines. But it seems only thing that's different is in Afghanistan they understand and don't plan to be victims. The Taliban don't be kidding, they be getting them crackers, hitting them bastards, and they ain't laughing. It's a serious business. Say they want them crackers off the block until the occupation stop. Say they gon' keep on resisting and that's hard. You say you hard, but when police come, you duck, duck, duck. Y'all duck and run for protection. But when there's beef up in the streets, y'all cats is ready to buck, buck, buck. But see, you buckin' in the wrong direction. You say you hard, but when police come, you duck, duck, duck. Y'all duck and run for protection. But when there's beef up in the streets, y'all cats is ready to buck, buck, buck. But see, you buckin' in the wrong direction. Police is testing like an F-cap, but F that. We rep that crew of cats to make you fly their head back. So step back, lest you looking for resistance. I gotta own my mind and remind you, Lavelle mixing, it's time to rebel. Listen, ain't no way out of this city. Light shining at night, so that iron be glistening. And you see his eyes twitching. Routine traffic stopping, the cops on the mission. He called himself a victim, cut off the transmission. Cause he don't want no evidence of the nice events. He plan to make you pass 10, but it's an African with sense. And he don't know if it's a funeral that's gonna be held on both sides of the fence. He has been too many falling, too many they done took from us, man. After Oscar Grant, we taking the stand. And when it's time to be defended, then you can say he did it any minute. We oppressed, we got a right to resist. You say you hard, but when police come, you duck, duck, duck. Y'all duck and run for protection. But when there's beef up in the streets, y'all cats is ready to buck, buck, buck. But see, you walking in the wrong direction. You say you hard, but when police come, you duck, duck, duck. Y'all duck and run for protection. But when there's beef up in the streets, y'all cats is ready to buck, buck, buck. But see, you walking in the wrong direction.
Just to let you know, we really special, so we don't start in the wrong direction, yo.
Nope.
New generation,
yeah.
Procrastination. No. You niggas laughing, but this shit is deeper than this rapping. This is more than raw. Dog is war.
Man.
Ready to pick up a 4-4 and blast for loss. Busting blindly. Niggas just might have missed the torch. Assign me. Fake niggas gon' think that I'm lost. Behind me.
Go.
All aboard.
Yeah.
Let's see through all the lies, freedom on the rise. Where's your pride?
Right here.
They even got a side.
Damn.
Cause lately my eyes been on the prize. Y'all lives y'all looping. While the starters of the game is on their revolution. When y'all niggas looting, talking about shooting. When they scared of death themselves, where's the movement? For them, never, never land.
You say you hard, but when police come, you duck, duck, duck. Y'all duck and run for protection. But when there's beef up in the streets, y'all cats is ready to buck, buck, buck. But see, you walking in the wrong direction. You say you hard, but when police come, you duck, duck, duck. Y'all duck and run for protection. But when there's beef up in the streets, y'all cats is ready to buck, buck, buck. But see, you walking in the wrong direction.
Yo, real talk, too many cats out there talk about how they thugs and they goons and they goblins or whatever they is, you know, how gangster they is and all this stuff. But let me tell you something, real hard is defending our children, defending our families, you know, defending our people. You know what I'm saying? The real gangsters is the ones that's coming in and shooting our people down in the streets. You know what I'm saying? If you really hard, deal with them suckers. Don't deal with the cat that's sitting next to you that's dealing with the same problems you're dealing with. Deal with the ones that shoot 7-year-old children in the streets. Deal with the ones that's keeping us oppressed. Then tell me how hard you are.
We're going to need a little bit of backup.
Uhuru, and welcome back to Africa Live here on uhururadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe. And we've been today, we've dedicated this program to Fred Hampton and to Robert Mangaliso Osibukwe, whose birthday is today. Fred Hampton's the anniversary, 41st anniversary of Fred Hampton's assassination was yesterday, December 4th. What we want to do is continue in this discussion around the legacy of Fred Hampton. And we happen to have on the line with us Diop Olugbala, who is the president of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement. Uhuru Diop.
Uhuru Comrade.
MPDOM has an interesting history itself in terms of even its founding that that you could say is a continuation of the legacy of Fred Hampton. Can you talk about that? Talk about the founding of Impidum and why? It is considered a continuation of Fred Hampton's legacy?
Yeah, well, Impidum first founded as the National People's Democratic Uhuru Movement by Chairman Omali Ishitela, of Chairman of the African People's Socialist Party, in on April 6, 1991, in Chicago, Illinois. And the date of the founding was symbolic in that this was the same day on which Lil Bobby Hutton, who was the youngest member of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense in Oakland, California, who was also at the age of, I believe, 15 or 14 years old, was assassinated by the Oakland police. And, of course, Chicago, Illinois, being the site of our founding convention, was also the city in which, as you said earlier, Chairman Fred Hampton built the strongest, arguably the strongest, most dynamic chapter of the Black Panther Party in Illinois, in Chicago, Illinois, and was also the city, of course, where Chairman Fred was assassinated, not only by the Chicago police, but in cooperation with the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, and other agents, agencies of the U.S. government. And so, you know, Impidum, we chose this date and site of the convention because, as an organization, Impidum was founded to rebuild and complete the Black Power Revolution of the 1960s, which also, as was laid out by yourself, and I heard the chairman's speech earlier today, where the chairman was running down the history of the Black Power movement, particularly the Black Power Revolution during the 1960s, which was a period of revolutionary anti-colonial struggle led by the African working and poor people and revolutionary organizations such as the Panthers. And this was a period where the masses of Africans in this country and around the world turned our backs to imperialism and were determined to regain control of our lives, our own government, and our resources. And so this was a very threatening period of struggle and resistance for imperialism. And it was also a period that was met by imperialism with a military attack on our movement in the form of the assassinations of leaders such as Malcolm X and the Black Panthers, and the forcing of various formations underground, and comrades like Assad Shakur were forced into exile. You know, it was a period of fierce counterinsurgency and repression against our revolutionary leadership. And the consequence was not only the destruction of organization, but the demoralization of our community. The masses were left without leadership. And in doing so, the state gained the ability to raise up neo-colonialism, the white power and black face, and also attacked the masses with the drug economy, the heroin in the 70s and crack in the 80s, and everything that came along with this illegitimate drug economy, the intensified military occupation of the community. But all of these ongoing attacks since the 60s is part of the same kind of insurgency that was waged during the 60s, and it was designed to make sure that the masses of African workers in this country would never again struggle for our freedom. And so the chairman and the African People's Socialist Party was determined to rebuild the revolution of the 60s, and we knew that the only way to do so would be to bring the masses of people back into political life, revolutionary political life. And so this was the fundamental basis for the building of Impidum as a mass organization that would teach the community how to get organized again, and also to raise up revolutionary demands and demands that called for the defense of the democratic rights of the African community. So this is the significance of Impidum in its founding, and Impidum plays a similar significance, but even more so, in this, you know, deepening crisis of imperialism. But that's essentially why MPDOM was built and why it has everything to do with the attack that our movement in the 60s endured.
So how does MPDOM now take on this question of the counterinsurgency and take on the question of bringing African people back into political life, who, as you say, you know, had been knocked out of political life, you know, after the murders of Fred and our other leaders and destruction of organizations?
Yeah. Well, you know, now, and unlike the period in which MPDOM was first founded, when it was founded as essentially, you know, a defensive strategy to defend the democratic rights of the African community, you know, to prevent the ongoing attacks being made against our community then, and we still do that through our Revolutionary National Democratic Program. You will still find demands that call for the defense of the democratic rights of African people. But in this period, we, first and foremost, we are all about taking the offensive. We're not trying to wait for the next crisis to impact our community. We're not trying to wait for the next African to be killed by the cops or the next child to be abused in the schools, but we are building in a concrete way an organization designed to actually take power in the hands of our people. We know what imperialism is going to do tomorrow. It's going to do the same thing it's been doing for the last 400 years, and now we're about building a real organizational capacity so that our people can be a self-determined, self-governing people. But that also requires ongoing struggle and, you know, mobilization in the community, in the streets, to expose, you know, this war being made against the community. So even while we're building institutions such as the Marcus Garvey Academy in St. Petersburg, Florida, which would be an actual institution, a charter school, where we can control how our children are educated, we are also out in the front lines holding demonstrations, militant protests in Philadelphia, demanding the end of the constant harassment and attacks on African youth in the community here. So, you know, but we want to unite all of the resistance that's being carried out by our community, not just in one city or another, but throughout the entire North American continent. Our goal is to unite the resistance and to forward the process of building a revolutionary organization to take power in our own hands.
You noted that this period is different from the period that MPDOM was founded in. In your view, is this period similar to the 1960s, where forces like Fred Hampton were engaged in struggle and others?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we see the same relationship, you know, that the government has with Africans then is the same relationship that we now have. And, you know, we also talk a lot about the crisis of imperialism, where around the world, oppressed people are fighting. They fighting back against white power, you know, in Iraq and Afghanistan and Korea and throughout Latin America, oppressed people are challenging this oppressive relationship. And this in itself is the reason why the crisis exists for imperialism. And, we know that right here in the U.S., imperialism, the U.S. government is trying to resolve its crisis by intensifying the attacks on the black community. And this is why it's more and more police murders are happening and the increasing numbers of Africans being locked up and whatnot. And even while, you know, the relationship, these attacks have been going on in the 60s, they're intensified today. But with that oppression, we're finding, you know, intensified resistance as well, you know, being carried out by the people. And I think now we're in a position, now that we actually have a guiding philosophy in the form of African internationalism that recognizes the need for a real revolutionary party to lead our people in united resistance around the world. We didn't have that benefit during the 1960s. And so even while we have leaders such as yourself, myself, the chairman of our party as a whole, you know, we now carry out leadership informed by revolutionary ideology that unites Africans around the world. We didn't have the benefit of that type of theory and even organizational capacity during the 60s, which was a large part of the reason why our movement was, you know, succumbed to the military attack by the U.S. government that it did.
And I think in addition to that, you know, we also didn't have, you know, access to veterans, you know, in our movement, that, you know, there wasn't anybody, you know, who had been engaged, you know, in revolutionary struggle before that, you know, here, you know, in terms of African people. And so I think that's another thing. You know, we have a certain kind of continuity, you know, that that I think that informs the theory, you know, of African internationalism that we that guides our work, you know. And I think that's another thing that we didn't have the benefit of in the 1960s.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because the fact is that, you know, Chairman O'Malley was one of those leaders during the 60s, and the Junta Militant Organizations, JOMO, the organization that he founded and led in that period, actually survived the counterinsurgency. And the Uhuru movement, whether in the form of JOMO or the party itself, remained above ground and continued to sum up the attacks, to sum up the counterinsurgency, and to sum up, you know, the way forward for the struggle. And, you know, this is why we have the theory, as you said, that we do today.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just really appreciate the movement, the Uhuru movement. I think about when you were saying, I was just thinking about when I first met the Uhuru movement, and what brought me to the movement was, you know, having seen, first of all, this continuity, you know, having seen leaders who were here, I mean, who had been engaged in the struggle this whole time. In fact, I had before meeting this movement, I had been in school and seen, you know, other people who were retired members of the Black Panther Party or whatever, you know, or retired activists, you know, who were touring around, you know, and doing speeches and stuff. And you know, that thing was so disappointing, you know, when you go to that thing and you expect to see somebody who is going to be, you know, calling for people to be engaged and struggling. You find out that they just run around tomming, you know. But that's one of the things I really appreciated when I came into contact with this movement, you know, just not just the continuity, but the fact that it's still that same dedication, drive from the 60s up to now, you know, and I think that's really important.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, yeah, I was in a similar situation when I came across the Uhuru movement. I actually came to the 2001, I believe, convention of NPDOM, and I heard the chairman speak, and it was just a mind-blowing analysis. Never heard that type of analysis before. And prior to that, you know, like you know, I had gone to different events on college campuses or even in the community where people who claim to have, you know, the answer. And at that point that I heard them, you know, I thought, okay, well, I guess this is the most advanced, you know, idea out here. But all of that really paled in comparison to not only the theory that I heard the chairman lay out, but the actual concrete, you know, work and organizational capacity on the ground. It ain't, you know, it helped me understand that being a revolutionary is not just a question of celebrating, you know, leaders of the past and movements of the past, to actually be engaged in struggle right now. You know, and this is something, you know, the problem still ain't solved. Our people still ain't free. And, you know, I'm thankful as well for the chairman and for the party for, you know, building, to create the opportunity for us to, you know, continue the struggle and carry out this thing to the end.
Yeah. We've been talking about Fred Hampton throughout. First of all, before I go any further, let me invite our listeners to participate in the discussion that we're having here. You can call in or you can email in. You can call the U.S. number, which is 727-565-1599. You can call the U.K. number, which is 020-8133-6629. Or you can call us through Skype for free anywhere in the African world. Our Skype ID is Uhuru Radio, and that's all one word, all lowercase. Or email us at dj@uhururadio.com. You know, we've been talking up to now, early in the program, we were talking about Fred Hampton, you know. And yeah. Fred Hampton was a young brother, you know, was when they killed him, he was 21. And so he was barely grown, you know, when he began to really be engaged, you know, in leading, you know, our struggle for freedom. How do you see young Africans carrying out that kind of legacy, you know, that Fred Hampton laid for?
Yeah. Well, you know, another difference in terms of what, Chairman Fred and you know, revolutionaries in that period were faced with, and what we have now is, again, like you said, the continuity of the movement, and, you know, through building an actual revolutionary party where, you know, our leaders and our organizers actually have the space to develop and mature as revolutionaries and as organizers, you know. During the 60s, you know, the masses of our people were swept into the historical process, even independent of their own consciousness to a certain extent, where, you know, revolution and resistance was the trend throughout the entire world. And many people joined without having the benefit of a cohesive ideology that spoke to the entire question that African people are confronted with. And, you know, that was even reflected in the Panthers itself, where you had a really, you know, ideological kind of eclectic type of situation, mm-hmm. you know, all types of contending ideas in the Panthers. Yeah, Maoists and nationalists and, you know, all types of anarchists and whatnot, you know, all types of contending ideas. There was no cohesive ideology. You know, and there were other weaknesses or limitations that our movement as a whole, not just the Panthers, but our movement as a whole was confronted with because of the historical situation that they were dealing with at the time. But because of the continuity of the movement today and having gone through all these struggles and solving all the problems that the party has done over the last 30, 40 years, we now have the ability to, you know, we don't have to try to solve all these problems. And that gives us the space to really, you know, develop and mature as revolutionaries and to really, you know, as it's been said, to live for the people as opposed to just expecting to have, you know, a short life as a revolutionary, you know, right. But to actually struggle and to build a real, you know, organizational capacity and the ability to truly be a self-governing people, which is what this work is all about, you know. So I think that, you know, we're thankful for the comrades, the martyrs who whose lives were taken, you know, in the name of our freedom. And, you know, for the young comrades coming into the work today, you know, we have to recognize that, you know, it is because of the struggles and the sacrifices made by these comrades that we have the ability to even, you know, be part of the struggle and, you know, put out such an advanced program in the first place, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and one thing that I think is important is this question of not just dying for the people, but living for the people, you know, because, I mean, sometimes, you know, people will hear and read some of the stuff from the 60s, and that, you know, like they might read Huey's book, To Die for the People, or you know, they may hear Fred, you know, when he said, you can kill the revolutionary, but you can't kill the revolution, and I'm going to die for the people, you know. And, the thing is, our aim is not to die, you know, for the people, but because dying for the people ain't that hard, you know, but living for the people is really the thing. And it's a thing that takes more work. And not only that, it's the thing that our people require, you know, because we need, you know, folks who can be engaged in the struggle and can lead the struggle to its conclusion. And dying kind of makes it difficult to do that. So,
definitely.
So, MP-Dumb is like you said, has moved from a defensive position to organizing and taking on the work in a really offensive kind of position. What does MP-Dumb have coming up that is engaged in?
Well, we have our next major mobilization will be the National Convention, scheduled for February 19th to the 21st, right here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And the theme of the convention is Africans have a right to resist. We demand freedom and reparations now. And the goal of the convention is to unite the resistance that's occurring throughout this country and around the world, really. But not only to unite the resistance, but to provide it with consciousness and organizational and political leadership. Because the fact is, even while the resistance is going down, you know, you have situations like Brother Omar Thornton, who recently was killed by the pigs in Milwaukee after he went back to, I think it was a beer factory he worked in, that he suffered over the years, you know, white nationalist co-workers and the bosses were terrorizing him, you know, and he was fired and came back and shot up all the white folk there, you know. And that's a form of the resistance. That's a response to this oppression that and terror Africans suffer. But obviously, we're not in this just to carry out individual acts of resistance alone, because that's not going to end the terror that the masses of our people suffering around the world.
Right.
So we're saying that form of resistance actually has to be hooked up with organized resistance. You know, what happened with Comrade, the brother Lovell Mixon in Oakland, California, where he took out four pigs after the Oakland Police Department executed in broad daylight in front of a video camera. They executed Brother Oscar Grant. And Lovell Mixon, that was clearly a response to what they did to Oscar Grant and what the police in Oakland do to black people on a regular basis. But Lovell did not have the benefit of revolutionary organization, so that his resistance would actually be tied to a strategy to take power in the name of African working and poor people in this country and around the world. And, you know, there's all types of resistance going down in the community. You know, mothers have to go down to the school to argue with the principal after their child was abused or had to suffer some type of attack in the schools. Our people are beat up by the cops all the time. The welfare office demeans and belittles and humiliates young African women on a regular basis. All types of attacks going on all the time. And our people feel that they alone, and they have to respond to that individually. So they get into an argument. They cuss the lady on the other side of the desk out, or they cuss the principal out, or they throw rocks at the police. And all of this resistance is right. But the real question is, how do we make these individual acts of resistance serve the overall struggle for the freedom of our entire people? And so this is what our upcoming convention is determined to do. To unite all of this resistance and also to help the people understand that the resistance that we are building here has a relationship to the resistance oppressed people around the world are engaged in against the same U.S. government that's attacking you in places like Detroit and Compton, California, et cetera. And so, you know, we say that, you know, our resistance is in unity and in solidarity with the resistance of North Korea, the resistance of the Iraqi people and the Afghani people, and the Palestinian people and the Venezuelan people, etc. And the fact is that, especially for Africans, if we are successful in building the type of resistance that I believe we can do right here in this country, the belly of the beast, the U.S. government will be too preoccupied putting down resistance in Philadelphia and St. Petersburg, Florida, and Oakland, California, to be able to deal with resistance anywhere else in the African world or in the world, period. So, you know, these are the broadest goals and objectives of our upcoming convention. And I want to encourage everybody who's listening right now to register for the convention. Registration is only $25. It's a three-day process. It will begin with the March of Resistance on Saturday, February 19th, and end with the all-day African Youth Resistance Conference on Monday, February 21st. And for all 3 days, the registration fee is only $25. You can go to our website right now, npdum.org. NPDUM is spelled INPDUM.org, and register online. Or if you want more information about how you can even get involved with the work, you can give my office a call at 215-459-7551.
All right, right on. So I'm assuming that people who are listening, especially after you've heard this interview with this dynamic brother, and having before that heard a presentation from Fred Hampton that was a dynamic presentation, and people want to get engaged in this struggle and want to be at that NPDUM convention. I'm assuming that that's the case because I know that's the way it goes. So, you know, go to that NPDUM website, folks. Go to www.npdum.org, register, and get engaged in bringing people even from your area. You know, I know, you know, you don't want to go by yourself. So bring people who are around you with you to the NPDUM convention in Philadelphia. I know I'm going to be there. So let's make that happen. I want to ask, is there anything else you want to say in closing, Comrade Diop?
Yeah, actually, I did want, because you asked the question of the similarities in terms of the struggle. Yeah. And I think we would be remiss not to speak to the question of the counterinsurgency. Yes. In terms of U.S. imperialism's determination to stop, to undermine, to frustrate the efforts of African and oppressed people to be free. And you spoke on it earlier in terms of, you know, the government's programmatic approach to putting down the resistance in the form of that period. It was the COINTELPRO, or counterinsurgency, counterintelligence program, which, you know, stated as a, you know, one of its objectives to prevent the youth from joining the revolution, to prevent the rise of leadership they call Messiah, but we know that's just revolutionary leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Electrify the masses. It spoke to prevent unity amongst various anti-colonial revolutionary formations, even to prevent who now may seem to be mild and simply liberal forces, even to prevent them from being influenced by the revolution. And I do believe that, well, we know, it's not even a general belief, but we know concretely that the U.S. government is involved in the same type of counterinsurgent activity. In fact, it never stopped. But right now, we've even been introduced, we've discovered documents that reveal clearly how the U.S. government is gathering intelligence about our movement, about the work being led by NPDUM and myself. The Pennsylvania Homeland Security Department actually released a couple of documents. One was a cooperation with an organization, a think tank, called the International Terrorist Research and Response Group, who they received a $125,000 contract from the state of Pennsylvania to develop a list of so-called terrorists or forces that they believe to be a threat to, you know, the status quo. And among the list was myself and NP Dub's name. And along with that, the Pennsylvania Department of Homeland Security released another document where they, you know, laid out the recent activities of NP Dub in the state of Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, where they talked about my trial, as well as different rallies and events that we held, raising up the demand of the freedom of political prisoners and African people from the prison system. So, you know, we know that, you know, the U.S. imperialism, and now, just most recently, the Canadian government denied me entry into Canada to speak at an event in Toronto because they are clear on the implications of NP Dub and the WHO movement's work in leading resistance amongst Africans there as well. So we know that the counterinsurgency is real. We know that it exists to stop the resistance, to silence the leadership of the resistance, whether myself or other leaders inside the Yehuda movement. And I say this all to say that one thing that we got to not only understand as organizers and revolutionaries, but we have to arm the masses of the people with this information and this understanding, because unlike the 60s, we now know what the U.S. government is doing. We didn't know about the secret agents and provocateurs and all of the contradictions they was creating inside our movement, but we know about that then, and now we know what they're doing right now. And with that information, we can put the masses on alert, saying this is what the state is doing. This is how we respond to it, by building real organizations. We don't move as individuals, but we all move as one organization with under one discipline, and this is how we're going to win. So, you know, I encourage everybody who's listening to stay abreast on what's going on with your movement. Listen to the voice of the International African Revolution if you want to get real information and real analysis, and not propaganda that the imperialists are trying to stuff down our throats. So I appreciate, you know, being able to be on this discussion. This is a really important discussion in time of struggle.
I wanna ask one more thing before we go. How do we today deal with some of those counterinsurgency tactics that we saw were used to take Fred Hampton and other leaders out? How do we deal with that stuff? Like, how do we deal with agent provocateurs who come into organizations, infiltrate organizations, and how do we deal with that stuff?
Yeah, well, you know, inside the Uhuru movement, we have a process known as criticism and self-criticism, as well as a system of governance known as democratic centralism, of which criticism and self-criticism is really a part. But fundamentally, through criticism and self-criticism, we are able to flush out any acts of sabotage that are committed by forces within our movement, whether these are acts consciously committed or unconsciously committed. Through self-criticism and criticism, when we identify errors being made, everybody in the movement who can recognize those errors has a responsibility to, you know, call the error out. Even the person that commits the error has a responsibility to say, I committed this error. This is what it meant. This is the implications that it had on our movement. And this is how, you know, I want to overturn not only the error, but also whatever the fundamental reason, whatever the incorrect idea that I may have in my brain that led me to making this error, I want to flush that out. And other members of the movement have a responsibility to contribute to that discussion. If you're in the same branch or chapter or unit, then you yourself have to, you know, unite or disunite, saying, you know, you're right, I made that same observation, and I believe that, you know, we have to investigate why it is that this error was made. And, you know, we go through a process of investigation, really trying to find out exactly what the problem was. Perhaps the question is, the comrade keeps showing up late. The comrade has the responsibility to make phone calls to get the people to the mass meeting. And the first time the comrade had the task, the calls were not made. So we have to say, well, first of all, somebody should say, you know, this is a problem. You were given the assignment to call the people. but you didn't make the call. So what's good? And the comrade has to respond to that, saying, well, you know, my phone was off, you know, and so I couldn't make the calls. And so, you know, the next logical step would be to say, well, what could have been done to avoid that issue? You know, if you knew that your phone was off, then you had a responsibility to say to the committee, look, my phone's off, I'm not going to be able to make this call, can somebody help me out? Or perhaps you can say, my phone is off, can somebody help me pay the bill, or can somebody lend me their phone? But the point is that the issue needs to be brought to the organization so that the error, the problem can be avoided. And once that is done, whether it's in advance of the error or in summation of the error, once that is done, then we shouldn't expect for the same error to be committed again. So now for next week, Conrad still didn't make the calls. The phone bill got paid. You know, he had the list, still didn't make the calls. Then people are going to have to start looking at that issue a little bit differently. Now it's not just a matter of him not understanding the issue or not even having the resources, but that was an entirely different question where he just don't want to make the calls. For whatever reason, he doesn't want to make the calls, even though he knows how important making the calls is to the building of the organization, et cetera. So at that point, everybody in the organization has to unite with this criticism and figure out a way to deal with it, whether it is to take that responsibility away from him, suspend him from that responsibility, or whatever. But it can't just be allowed to keep going on and on and on. Because if you do, then that's where we find attacks. Our organization is open to the types of attacks that we saw being carried out during the Black Power Revolution of the 1960s. And that's a very simplistic example, but it's fundamentally one of the most potent weapons that we have against infiltration, provocateurs, etc. And there's, you know, more that comes along with criticism and self-criticism and our system of democratic centralism, which holds everybody accountable to a certain system through which decisions are made that, you know, can be studied, I'm sure, in documents made available by Uhuru News. But the real question is having a cohesive organization, a program, and a strategy that everyone unites with. And if they don't unite, that needs to be stated or revealed through the process of criticism and self-criticism.
Right, I think that's really important for folks to understand, you know, because that, you know, it's not like COINTELPRO stopped, you know, it didn't stop, you know, and you still have, you know, these type of tactics being used and other tactics being used, you know, now they deem you terrorists, you know what I'm saying,
yeah.
and use that whole Homeland Security stuff against folk. But I think it's important to understand, you know, so we can be able to guard our organizations from attacks from the inside, you know, from those who are working for the state on the payroll, and for those who are working for the state and ain't on the payroll, and just, you know, because of their backwards actions function to help move the state forward. I think that's really important. I want to again thank you, comrade, for coming on to speak to this. I really thought it was important to bring you on the program where we deal with raising up Fred Hampton's legacy, because in my view, you are one of those examples of carrying on the legacy of Fred Hampton. Your leadership of MP Dumb, carrying it into carrying this struggle to completion. I think that it's really important, and I hope that your example also serves as an example to young Africans everywhere. So I want to appreciate you again for coming on.
I appreciate that too, comrade. Can I just make one announcement real quick?
Do that.
Is that okay? This coming Wednesday, speaking of the question of young Africans, this coming Wednesday, the Philadelphia branch of NPDOM will be holding a hands-off African youth rally of resistance in front of the gallery, which is a major shopping mall in downtown Philadelphia, where billions of dollars, I'm sure, of wealth from the African community is extracted on a yearly basis. And at this place, the African youth suffer attacks, harassment by police. They can't even stand in the store without security coming to force them out of the store or even get arrested. And these are conditions that the youth face throughout the city. But the fact is that it's an apartheid type state apparatus that we're dealing with in Philly. And we are building this rally of resistance to organize the entire community to oppose these attacks on our youth and to really give us the opportunity to build a united resistance. A lot of complaints are always made by adults talking about how disrespectful the youth are, et cetera. But the real question has to be asked, why should the youth show any respect if the adults, so-called adults, are not even going to stand up against the state that is attacking the entire community, especially the youth? And so we believe that this process here will serve to unite the community in revolutionary resistance. And so I want to encourage everybody that's listening, if you're in the Philadelphia area, to participate in this demonstration. And if you're not in Philadelphia, I want to encourage you to build a similar action and to really raise up this question of the defense of African youth and the call to bring them into revolutionary organization.
Uhura. So y'all heard it. If you're in the Northeast area, you need to be there. And if you ain't in the Northeast area and you can get there, you need to be there as well. So we're going to close this portion of the program out, and I want to close it out with this song called The State by Comrade Diop under the rap name of Africa's Trigger or Trigger Knob. So this is The State right that here on Uhura Radio.
Trapped in the stage, by the stage, my little homie got clapped by the J's. The state carry weight in and out of state. That's how it is when you trapped by the stage. Trapped in the states, by the stage. My caravan got snatched by the J's. Africans get paid like holiday. That's how it is when you trapped by the stage. They're telling us to integrate into the populace and be a good house nigga like Obama is. But the fact is, Africans are held captive from a land we was fractured by the. Trapped in the states, by the states. My little homie got clapped by the J's. The state carry weight in and out of states. That's how it is when you trapped by the states. Trapped in the states, by the states. My caravan got snatched. Africans get paid like holiday. That's how it is when you're trapped by the state. And you spend a lifetime on the grind trying to shine. Meanwhile, a diamond mine's getting dry by design. 60,000 carats leave every single year. Only range we know is the ones we can hear. The broad sucking system that we live in it. No matter how you hustle, illegal or legitimate. And yo, I spent nights in Brooklyn's with the best minds in Brooklyn. It became crystal clear. These crackers got us ill and care. Matter of fact, they got us building. They hold economy, they getting prison money over every drill they dropped on me. You think you in the big leagues, cause you cop the key? We prisoners of war, they got us like they got Belize. We copping D's while the people live in poverty. Guns to all our heads, they tell us drop to our knees. After common deeds, the new plan to stop the revolution led by the African. States. My little homie got clapped by the J's. The state carry weight in and out of state. That's how it is when you try. stay, stay, stay. We at war with house niggas and police. Winters with no heat. Junk food and corner stores leave us with no teeth. Don't fuck with no beef. Take one to take what you earn or leave a nigga looking like you don't eat. Put on a bull going on in my community. You make me wonder what more these crackers could try to do to me. Anything that you can think of, they call me. From the slum lords to the local fiends, we don't sleep. The shots ring out regularly in the middle of the night. Clap back or don't eat. It's that simple, it's not a riddle. The only issue, who to put these slugs into? Who responsible for the bull we go with them? We say the state got us trapped in this misery, living in the ghetto. Some say we in prison in the mental. I disagree, we held hostage militarily.
You're listening to WhoRadio.com, voice of the International African Revolution.
It's the Marcus Garvey Legacy Crew.
Set sail with the Uhuru Movement and the African People's Socialist Party on December 12th through 18th for a seven-day cruise to Key West, Grand Cayman, and Ocho Rios, Jamaica, aboard the luxurious Carnival Freedom cruise ship. Special guests include our very own Chairman Omali Eshitela, leader of the Uhuru Movement, and the very talented Ron Bob Simple, creator of the Spirit of Marcus Garvey, a one-man show in which Simple delivers an uncanny exactness of the legendary Garvey, transporting the onlooker back to the time of the revolutionary spirit that gave birth to the African Socialist Movement. Cabin prices are from $519 per person. For more information, please visit our website at uhurulegacycruise.com. Again, that's uhurulegacycruise.com. Book your room today with Tanya's Travel by calling 352-232-2131 or by email at tanyastravel@bellsouth.net. We hope you all can set sail with us on the ship named for our struggle, Freedom, Uhuru.
Tune into Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Semple, every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 a.m. on the Uhuru Radio Network. We examine issues that affect Caribbean and Caribbean American nationals, both at home and across the diaspora. If you're not listening to Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Semple, here on the Uhuru Radio Network, then your radio is not on.
Oh,
Freedom Song from Occupied Azania, Tula Mama, and that is sung by Patra, a brother out there in Occupied Azania, what is still known by the colonial name South Africa. Had the opportunity of meeting that brother when I was there last. We want to now just speak to another giant in the African liberation struggle whose birthday was today. In 1924, December 5th, today, Robert Mangaliso Sobukwe was born. And for those who are unfamiliar with Robert Mangaliso Sobukwe, he was leader of the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania. He was its founder, in fact. He was, that organization at that time was a revolutionary organization who was a real organization on the ground that making struggle in Occupied Azania, engaged in armed struggle in Occupied Azania to overturn the colonial regime in power there. During that period, in fact, Sobukwe, before founding the PAC, was a member of the African National Congress's youth organization. And what happened was after the African National Congress came out with the Freedom Charter that said that South Africa belonged to all who lived there, basically both the oppressor and the oppressed alike, Sobukwe made the split and founded the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania. And like I said, at that time, it was a revolutionary organization that, unlike the ANC, which made a policy of not attacking the colonialists themselves, but actually attacking, doing stuff like blowing up trash cans and stuff like that, the PAC took on directly, you know, attacking the colonial regime. And Sobukwe was an incredible leader. He was one who was in touch, who was in touch with Kwame Nkrumah, with Patrice Lumumba, and who was an Africanist. He was one who was for United Africa, and he was one who was a critical leader there in Occupied Azania, and was also one who was imprisoned. He who was in prison when he was imprisoned. Unlike Nelson Mandela, they never let Sobukwe live. In fact, he when they let him out of prison, they had poisoned him, and there are different conclusions that people come to in terms of how exactly they poisoned him, but they poisoned him so that he died shortly after getting out of prison. Sobukwe was an incredible leader there in Occupied Azania. And there are articles that we have up on Uhuru News where you can check it out and look at who Sobukwe was as this incredible leader. And he is one of those who we hold up as African martyrs who contributed greatly to the African liberation struggle. And so we just want to raise up Robert Mangaliso Sobukwe and his legacy, and say that the struggle in Occupied Azania is not complete. And in fact, the struggle in Occupied Azania is one that is going to require for its completion the end of this struggle in isolation, where we see ourselves fighting as South Africans, you know, or confined to these borders that our oppressor has created for us. That if we're to continue to struggle, if we're to carry our struggle to completion, that it has to be broken outside of those borders. It has to be as part of this process, this international African revolution. And not only that, it has to be part of this struggle that is led by the African working class, by a revolutionary organization, a single worldwide African revolutionary organization led by the African working class. In Occupy Zania today, we see the conditions are worse than they were under apartheid for African people. I was reading an article the other day that that talked about the conditions of Africans who are farm workers being just as bad, if not worse, today. How the white folks who run these farms on stolen land, first of all, you know, are able to brutalize African people in just terrible kinds of ways. And not only that, just the poverty itself in occupied Zania has gotten worse since Mandela and his crew came into power. And is a statement of the failure of neocolonialism, and it is a statement of the failure even of Pan-Africanism, the limitations of Pan-Africanism as an idea that that doesn't have worked out who is going to lead, and in fact. Depending on who it is we're talking about, who calls himself a Pan-Africanist at any point in time, can be defined as a different kind of thing. We recognize that we have to go beyond the limitations of Pan-Africanism, the limitations of the struggle as it has been waged, and we have to make this struggle as one single African revolutionary struggle around the world, led by the African working class. And I just want to take this moment to call on Africans who are listening to us in occupied Zania to join in this struggle that we're engaged in. It is in joining the African Socialist International and building the ASI in these various places in the world where we are, that we're able to take the struggle to completion. So I just want to make the call for Africans out there, particularly in occupied Zania, but also everywhere else around the world where you're listening from, to join the ASI. Go to the website asiuhuru.org. Sign up there to join the ASI, and or send information to us here at uhururadio.com and let us know that you want to be a part of that process, because this is our time, you know. We see everywhere around the world, as we were talking about earlier, people are engaged in this struggle to overturn imperialism, you know, and it is time for African people to be in the fray, and we can win, you know, we have to win, but it's going to require us to be engaged in the struggle everywhere around the world where African people find ourselves. So, I wanted to say that, again, raise up, comrade Robert Mangaliso Sobukwe, who served as an example to African people everywhere around the world. And we're going to move on through the program here. We're going to play a little bit of music for you. we're going to go now to a song that I've first heard in when I was in Sierra Leone by a group called P-Square. This is called Enoi Easy. So Africans who are checking us out from Sierra Leone know about this. Or checking us out from Nigeria or other places in West Africa, y'all know about this. P-Square with Enoi Easy.
Make we the tango, yeah. Baba God, now your hand working, yeah, yeah. You know,
We all over Africa right now. That was Enor Easy, or Enor Easy is the name of the song by P Square. We're based in Nigeria, and this is Apla Bafana, which is a liberation song from the PAC out of occupied Zaire, what is now known still as South Africa. That was Apla Bafana, a liberation song out of occupied Zaire. And we're coming to the end of the program for the day. I just want to, again, thank Diabo Lugbala, the president of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement, for coming on and speaking with us early on the program. Want to again raise up Robert Mangali Sosa Bukwe, incredible giant in African Revolution, another giant in African revolutionary struggle, Fred Hampton, and call on every African who is listening to this program to do as we add on the front of a Burning Spear newspaper many years ago. Let the African out. Let the African out. And and let's let's make this struggle for our liberation. They say inside every, the cover of that spear, by the way, said inside every Negro is an African trying to get out. So let that African out. Let's make this struggle. Let's win. World, one Africa, one nation. Ease way lay to the Africa. That's Zulu for the land is ours. War.
So don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African. No mind denomination, that is only segregation, you're an African. So don't care where you come from, as long as you're